No one ever told you you got a body built to last.
With a 15-story dead stop, you're going nowhere and fast.
A goddamn, 20, 30, 40,
15-story halo.
10, 20, 30, 40,
15 stories
high. I said 10, 20, 30, 40,
15-story halo.
10, 20, 30, 40,
7 miles wide.
Unlim Life is the podcast that you are now listening to, starring me, Dave White of Movies.com, and Alonso Duralde of TheRap.com, who makes inexplicable music choices at the beginning of the show.
My musical choices.
And now let's start talking about how great Gravity is.
Wait, we were in the middle of a conversation before we got started. About how you're next.
Hang on.
If we go right into a movie, no one's going to know what show they're listening to. That does not scan.
This is. I need to understand what that was that I just heard, because I've lived with you 16 out of the 18 years that we have been together.
17.
I've lived with you 16 years and 8 or 9 months out of the 18 years that we've been together. Mm-hmm. And I thought I had heard every song that I didn't like on your cassette collection.
But see, that's what's great about relationships. There's always new things to learn.
They're always unfolding like a flower.
Exactly.
That grows out of compost. I don't know what that was. I don't know why you played it. I want to know.
I played it because I like it. The fact that you hate it this much is just a bonus.
What is it?
It's ABC.
Oh, God. See, here's your problem.
I'm going to tell you a little bit about one of your problems.
You hear the first hit single by a band in the 80s.
Uh-huh.
And you go, I love that song. In this case, The Look of Love, which is a tremendous song, okay? A tremendous song that I could still listen to many, many times over and over and over again. And then you think, I'm going deep with this band. They're gonna reveal rich nuances as I go deeper with this band. And you know what band didn't do that? ABC.
Shush.
And this is one example of probably many examples of why ABC is terrible. Here's the other thing I want to know about you while we're on the subject of things that are wrong with you.
What are the things you don't really want to know because you've already made up your mind, whatever the question is. What
color is it in your mind? Like I think of the 80s as this really unhappy decade.
Yeah, you were listening to the Smiths and feeling sorry for yourself and making questionable hair choices.
And I don't understand. Were you? I mean, I know you weren't one of the neon kids of the 80s.
No, I was not wearing hypercolor.
But I don't get anything about the way you lived then. Because here's one thing. We would not have been friends.
No, probably not.
And
I don't know. We were both in college radio.
See, here's the thing about that. You would have been the guy with the shift that I'd been like, I don't know who let him in.
But you know what?
I had
friends who were 4AD people, just because I was playing Scritti Politti on my show. And yeah. We couldn't get along in other ways.
I wasn't playing 4AD on my show.
Mm.
I was playing some straight up horrifying noises. I'm not saying that means that I'm better than you. I'm just saying, I mean, my musical taste is better than yours. But I don't understand how you can resolutely live in the 80s so much of your musical life. Like, what? How?
I love how you say this as though your music and musical choices made perfect sense to everybody. And yeah. I'm the weirdo.
You are the weirdo.
I'm the weirdo because I don't own the Decapods cassettes.
You always gotta bring it back to the Decapods.
Well, I'm just saying. I understand that you have this sort of
field recording.
You have this eccentric and eclectic taste in music, and I get that about you, and I even kind of like that. But then you treat me like I'm the weirdo here.
I think it's just really strange. I just think it's a weird thing to do to, you know, take a band that is kind of just half-assed and had a good song, like a good song, and then be like, yeah, them. You know, I'm sticking with it.
You know what? This is the only
ABC. See it through to the end with ABC.
This is the only No, I take it back. I have two of their albums. But, you know, so what? Just because you decided that they were a one-hit wonder, even though they continued to put out other... Did you not even like Poison Arrow?
Poison Arrow's fine.
Big of you. Thanks. I'm sure they appreciate that. Martin Fry is writing you a thank you note right now. Thanks, Dave White.
It's no look of love. Poison Arrow's no look of love.
Consider yourself lucky that I didn't put on Wind Smoke.
What was even the name of that song that I just played?
15 Story Halo.
What does that mean?
I don't know. To this day, I don't know what the song means, but I've always liked that song. I could have played When Smokey Sings. I know you really hate that one. So... You know,
there might not be a worse song of the 1980s.
Oh, come on.
When Smokey Sings.
Come on.
We built this city. We Built This City is worse, but not by much. And
Kiri?
I'm all right with that one.
Oh, really?
It's garbage, but it doesn't make me want to go around killing people.
I see.
Like, there are songs that make me want to go around killing people, and that's We Built This City and When Smokey Sings and...
What's that
Berlin song from Top Gun? The song
Take My Breath Away?
The Love Makey one?
Take My Breath Away.
That makes me want to murder people.
Mm.
Everything that has ever been made by the Wall of Voodoo guy that you like, can't stand any of that.
Stan Ridgway.
Yeah, him.
You're
a huge fan of him.
Now you're just being mean.
I don't like that stuff, but that wasn't a hit. I just don't like it.
Now you're just being mean.
No. What? I mean, fortunately, your taste tends to run to dumb, forgettable things from movie soundtracks. And you did like the John Hughes soundtrack, so that those are sort of palatable, alt girl kind of musics. I'm all right with that stuff too.
I would mock your music more, except that I don't remember the names of any of it, because I've actively blocked it from entering my mind. I don't want it in my happy place.
It's
the corpse-grinding music that you listen to. So I'm not going to sit here and be judged by the likes of somebody who listens to Xanthor or whatever.
Xanthor is my bro.
Fine. Y'all can go bro it up all you want.
There's no such thing as Xanthor.
I will be listening.
He just made up that name because he doesn't know anything.
I will be listening to my ABC tapes.
There is no Xanthor.
Be perfectly happy. But there could be, and if there were, you would be listening to them.
Zamfir.
Well, yes, he is the master of the pan flute. We know how you love that. But who doesn't?
We talk about movies.
Yes.
After a little bit of arguing, some light arguing.
To get the day rolling.
And the movies. We don't have to start talking about Gravity just yet.
No.
What we do need to talk about is the thing we just sat down and watched.
Well, no, wait.
What do you want to talk about now?
We were having a conversation.
You run the show. Make the decision.
And I said, let's finish this conversation on the air, because we were starting to talk about...
Oh, about Your Next.
Your Next. Which is not going to break $20 million. No.
And it's your fault, everyone listening.
Everybody listening,
it's your fault.
I mean, The Purge
made... Not that
made,
I actually care if movies make or break, you know, lots of money or whatever, but Your Next is really good.
As a cultural observation,
and,
it's interesting.
And I think it's interesting that nobody went to see this movie.
Well, it's weird. That, I mean, you know, you can mint money on a horror movie if it's... You know, the Paranormal Activity series or whatever, or the Insidious movies. But I think that when you mess with the genre the way that Your Next or Cabin in the Woods does, Like, the word gets out, and people who just want to see straight-up horror do not want to see, you know, meditations on horror.
But this was, Your Next was not a meditation on anything. It was straight-up horror. It didn't even, I mean, it with great subtlety, it tweaked convention.
Mm-hmm.
But not so that if you weren't of a mind to see those things happening, it would distract you.
I mean, it delivers the goods if you're just there for the goods.
Exactly. I don't get the disinterest on the part of the public. I don't know why they didn't see it. Mm-hmm. You know, even the horror people who can be counted on,
right,
they didn't see it.
Yeah.
And it can't be because there were no stars in it, because the paranormal movies don't have stars.
True.
Any of them.
True, and I don't think that people are going to see Insidious because they love Rose Byrne so much.
No, it's not. I'm a little confused as to why this is happening, or not. Why is it not?
Why is it not happening? Yeah, I don't know. Because you're right. It's not like Cabin in the Woods. They don't really mess with things so much.
Could it be that because critics praised Your Next so much,
people thought it was going to be some egghead movie?
Thought it might be something like Cabin in the Woods.
Could be.
Or they thought it was going to be something like, oh no, artful.
Not that.
Maybe in a circumstance like this, critical acclaim is what a movie does not want.
Although, I mean, come to think of it, I mean, I guess when, like, the VHS movies and the 26, what are the A to Z to Death movie, whatever
right.
thing was, you know, those aren't necessarily batten down the hatches either as far as money goes. So it might just be that there's a sort of indie horror level, and then there's a, you know, big studio, super wide release, you know, bombardment
but
of advertising.
Wasn't Your Next a super wide release? Wasn't it a big, like, 2,000-3,000 screen
release? I think it was, but I don't know that it had the kind of push, you know, that like a Paranormal Activity gets. I don't know.
I guess. I don't know.
I don't know. All right, so, okay, we'll start with what we just watched, then.
We just watched the first Christmas movie of the year.
Woo! Welcome to the fourth quarter of 2012. It's October.
It is. It's linoleum-tober.
Oh, really?
Yes. I've decreed. It's linoleum-tober.
And how does that work?
We own this month, mm-hmm. you and me, this podcast, our website, linoleum-knife.com.
I'd rather own December.
We own it. No. We own this month, also the next two. But
I see.
Next month is linoleum-vember.
Ah.
And the month after that is linoleum
December.
December.
Linoleum-ber. We could have that twice in a row.
Yeah. So, yeah.
What are you even talking about? I don't even understand where we got to this.
Well, because this movie is out much long. It's a long time before Christmas.
Yes.
There, according to Christmas Countdown on Twitter, mm-hmm. which I follow.
Yes, me too.
Counting down the days until Christmas on Twitter. Because we love Christmas. And not as a goof either.
No,
like,
genuinely.
Perhaps you're new to us. We're super into Christmas.
Yes.
In fact, you are so super into Christmas that you wrote a whole book about Christmas movies.
It's true.
And what's the name of that book, Alonzo?
It's called Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas. And if you would like to...
What publisher put that out?
Applause Books.
Yes.
And if you would like to get a copy of the book autographed by the author, who is me...
Yes, you can have that.
You can order that directly from us.
Yes.
Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com and we will fill you in with
all the details. I'll tell you how to give us all your money.
That's right.
You'll get an autographed copy,
mm-hmm.
and perhaps a little Christmas surprise in the book.
Yeah.
And not perhaps, you will.
And we'll...
It's a thing that...
You've promised that before. And
I delivered.
Did you? Okay.
I sure did.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Just checking.
I mean, it's not like a gift card to Home Depot or whatever, but it's, you know, it's...
Thing.
Dumb little thing that
yes.
you get in the book. Yeah.
You have it,
a personalized.
Get it for yourself.
Touch.
Have it signed for a friend, you know.
Bit of cookie,
perhaps.
Inside the book. Crumbs that fall from the cookie I'm eating while I'm putting other things in the pages.
It's a book that people have liked.
Yes, people have liked it, and it has made you a popular talking head at Christmas time for Christmas-related TV shows, like the Turner Classic Movies special about Christmas movies and the History Channel special about the history of Christmas in the 20th century. You were on both of them because of your authorship of that book.
And when they get their annual rerunning, we'll let you know about that, too.
Yeah. So anyway, we super dig Christmas, and so when we heard that this movie was coming out at the very first week of October, we were confused, and
it's because it's coming out on DVD in mid-November.
We decided to watch it. Yeah, here's the thing about it. It opened this past Friday in how many markets? 10 cities?
10, yes.
And maybe like a screen per city.
Yeah,
like there's one screen.
It opened in
all
Burbank
of Los
here.
Angeles that's playing this movie.
Yeah.
It's a little indie film with a big cast, like a big name cast.
Yeah,
and it's a little indie film.
And it's also available on demand. So
it's
you can
immediately
watch it
available on demand. You already can watch it right now if you want.
It stars Paul Giamatti and Paul Rudd. But has a lot of familiar faces in the supporting cast as well. Sally Hawkins, yes, who's great. The woman from who was just in Enough Said and who's in A Serious Man.
I forget her name. You were the one that told me her name.
Hang on.
Ledbetter?
No, it's like Ackerman or Lackerman or something like that.
Lydecker?
Yes, Waldo Lydecker.
Linoleum? Is her last name linoleum?
No, it's not linoleum.
It begins with an L. She was in A Serious Man.
Yes.
She played the minxy neighbor.
Right.
In A Serious Man. Amanda something?
Hang on. Amy Landecker.
The Amanda Linoleum.
Yes,
life
Amanda lifer. Linoleum is in this. also, Coleman Domingo, who is the guy who hires the butler in The Butler, who also used to play Maya Angelou reading from Craigslist on Big Gay Sketch Show.
Yes.
He pops up. And also the kid who I didn't realize was both the son of Emery Cohen, who was both the son of
nobody knows his name.
I know, but hang on. When I explain who he is, I'll know who he is. He played the son of Bradley Cooper in Place Beyond the Pines.
Yes, he did.
And he also played the son of Deborah Messing on the first season of Smash.
If you watched that show, you'll
who
know.
Who didn't watch Smash?
Me. I did not watch that show.
But lots of people didn't watch Smash.
So it's 95 degrees here right now. And so we're watching this movie on demand in our underpants.
It gave me deja vu
the fan on
and to writing the book.
Like, why it's so damn hot still.
I know.
Or not still, but again. Because we don't live in a hot environment. People think Los Angeles is always, you know,
balmy,
surf and bird and stuff. But it's not. It's a very mild environment. So for it to be 90 degrees is gross, and nobody likes it.
Especially because we don't have air conditioning.
Yeah, and so I'm kind of surprised that it is this temperature in October, because by now, normally, we're back into reasonably fall-like temperatures.
It's cotton sweater weather by now.
Well, most of the time. So I'm shocked by that, and doubly annoyed that I'm watching this Canadian-ish Christmas movie.
Well, look,
I'm sweating.
When I was researching the book, I was watching, you know, all the versions of A Christmas Carol in August. So
I remember.
I'm fully used to this.
I was there.
Disconnect.
So this stars Paul Giamatti as an ex-con.
Right.
Who he's on parole, desperate to win back his wife and child. Unfortunately,
his wife has told his child
that he is dead.
Awkward.
And she has taken up with one of his friends and co-workers, Paul Rudd. And they're going to be married.
As soon as he can get a divorce from his current wife.
Yeah. She divorced Giamatti in prison.
Right.
And she's fixing to marry Paul Rudd.
Right.
It's Christmas time. He's got to get a job and make good.
He's technically
without being a robber, which is what he was before.
He's also not supposed to leave the area because he's on parole.
But he ditches Canada for the United States for a few weeks so he can go sell Christmas trees with Paul Rudd.
In New York.
And, you know, stuff happens. He meets Sally Hawkins. She's a Russian maid for a rich dentist.
Mm-hmm.
And
who is off skiing in the hole of Jackson.
Yeah. And so, it's a bummer.
Yeah, it's one of those movies where the sky is always slate gray.
Yeah.
And no one's having a very good time.
It's a bad, unhappy Christmas, like, for pretty much everybody.
All the Christmas music on the soundtrack is very sort of jazzy and slow down, and you know, if anybody,
and then they gut you.
Yeah, if anyone is feeling Christmassy in the movie, it's clearly meant to be sort of ironic, or they're a jerk or something.
Yeah, and then the one familiar, well, new familiar song that they use to just gonna gut you at the end is the Tracy Thorne song that was released last year.
Right,
she put out Everything But the Girl, Tracy Thorne. Yes. She put out a Christmas album last year.
Yeah.
That basically every song on that album is like River by Joni Mitchell.
Basically, yes.
It is the saddest sounding. First of all, you've got this woman who might have the saddest voice in pop music.
Mm.
You thought Karen Carpenter, she's like the heir to Karen Carpenter in terms of that voice automatically sounds sad all the time.
It's the soundtrack to Seasonal Affective Disorder, this album.
So even though the song is about like, it's a very Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas kind of song, where the song recognizes, you know, everything's garbage and terrible, but let's be happy for a minute. But it's this tension kind of song, because her voice is so inherently mournful sounding all the time. It's perfect for this film. And so it's a very sweet movie. It's much funnier than I thought it was going to be.
I assumed it would be funny.
It has a third act.
Joy, by the way, is the name of the song.
The name of the song is Joy. It has a third act plot development that is beyond unbelievable. But I didn't mind it so much because it was in the service of this bigger idea.
Right.
That for people like this, and there are, you know, most of the people in the world are, you know, working class, working poor, or just flat out poor and destitute. That's pretty much the majority of the world. You get a situation like Christmas, you know, accompanying, you know, sort of
things already being crappy,
you know, bagged out lives. It's inherently any happiness comes with a side order of, you know, sorrow or bittersweet feeling, and it's about sacrifice, and it's about, you know, losing, which is not the kind of happy ending Christmas movie that you want.
No, it is you need to go into this knowing that this is not going to be.
It's a very good-hearted film. But it is quite sad.
Yeah.
And gray and wet. And people get punched in the face a lot.
True.
So I recommend it.
if this is the sort of Christmas movie that you're okay in putting into the rotation, you know, this is not White Christmas. This is not.
No.
You know, is that even It's a Wonderful Life? I mean, it's a stone cold bummer.
It's kind of a crappy life, sort of. It's a crappy kind of life.
Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, if you like your Christmas movies in a minor key, this might be the one to check out. It's directed by the guy that did Junebug.
Yeah.
And you know, it's funny.
And Giamatti is great because he's always great.
It's funny to hear Paul Rudd sort of. There's a point where he pours on the Quebecois accent, like really thick, as a way to sell Christmas trees to Americans. Yes. And it's really funny because he takes the accent he's sort of been doing the whole movie and then just pumps it up to what you would think an American actor doing a bad Quebecois accent would sound like.
Yes.
He super exaggerates.
Sorry for all the drama.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. For the dollars.
As we were watching the film, we had a discussion about divorcing your love while they're in prison.
Mm-hmm.
I would not do that to you.
Mm-hmm.
I would wait for you if you were in prison for robbing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would happily live off the bounty of your many robs that you were caught doing that sent you to prison.
Well, that's assuming the government doesn't come and take all my rob money away from
no,
me.
No, they wouldn't. I would hide it in a secret place.
I see.
Which would make me an accomplice, but you wouldn't turn me in because of love.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So I get to go to jail, and you get to enjoy all the money outside of jail.
Yes, but again, when you get out, I would wait for you.
Uh-huh.
And I would be there with some of the money still.
Uh-huh.
And a place for you to stay.
Uh-huh.
And chores, household chores for you to do. Like taking out the trash and scrubbing the toilets and doing the dishes. The things you do now.
Wow.
It would be so great.
I'm really
for you after you got out of prison.
I
would not divorce you and go marry Paul Rudd.
I'm so moved by all this.
I thought you would
it's
be.
It's like this a Christmas miracle.
It's my Christmas gift to you early.
Mm-hmm. When can I return it?
Why don't you tell everyone about the crappy movies that you saw that I didn't have to see this week?
Lucky you.
We're going to get to Gravity eventually, but we're going to make you wait. We're going to make you wait for
it. Right.
After this. Everything leading up to it is going to be so amazing for you to hear about.
Yeah,
Tell them about ACOD.
Yeah,
you can do that in 60 seconds.
Sure. Early fall is sort of like, you know, January.
Yeah.
Or late summer. It's just with a lot of stuff just kind of gets dumped. So yeah, ACOD, it's an acronym for Adult Children of Divorce. It's a comedy with Adam Scott.
I'm one of those.
It's a comedy with Adam Scott. It premiered at Sundance this year, and it's kind of all over the place.
I had a divorce happen to me when I was a kid.
Yes.
Yeah. Now I'm an adult.
Two.
What do you mean, two?
You had two divorces.
No, just one.
Just one?
Well, as a kid.
Oh, you were...
My mom didn't divorce my rotten stepfather until I was, like...
A grown-ass man.
I was, like, in my 30s.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
And when finally she did, I was like, God, it's about time. Like, seriously, we've all been wanting you to do this forever.
So the film stars Adam Scott, and he is the son of Richard Jenkins and Catherine O'Hara, who had a super horrible, volatile divorce when he was a kid. He has spent his entire life trying to sort of keep them away from each other to, you know, maintain some level of order in his life and to kind of shield his younger brother, played by Clark Duke, from his parents' craziness. So he's, you know, Adam Scott's gun shy about divorce. He's been in a long-time relationship with a yoga instructor played by Mary Elizabeth Winstead, but, you know, neither of them is in any hurry to get married. So things get complicated when the Clark Duke character announces that he's getting married, and so he wants both of his parents to be there, and Adam Scott has to try and figure out a way to kind of broker peace between them. But then they start having an affair with each other, even though they've since gone off and married other people. So that gets crazy. And also Adam Scott discovers that who he thought was his therapist as a kid was actually just a researcher who was writing a book about children of divorce, and she's played by Jane Lynch. And so he starts talking to her again, and she decides that it's time to do a sequel about all those kids that she talked to now that they're adults, blah, 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 blah.
It sounds very blah, blah, blah.
Well,
blah,
yeah,
blah,
I mean, this all sounds like it could potentially be funny. All these people are very funny. Amy Poehler's also in it, and Ken Howard's also in it. And there are some laughs in it. There are a few laughs in it, I will grant. But generally speaking, it's just, it doesn't really add up to anything.
Great. Moving on. What is the other terrible movie you saw?
I also saw Parkland, which is about the fateful day in November 1963 when John F. Kennedy was shot in Dallas, because we haven't had any movies about that. The interesting tack that this one tries to take is let's focus on the little people that were sort of in the outskirts of things. So
whose lives were not all that interesting and who for everyone it's just sort of another day.
It's about the doctors and nurses of Parkland. It's about the Secret Service guys and the FBI guys and Abraham Zapruder, played by Paul Giamatti, who's having a busy week. And this is one of those rare movies that is not very good, but would have been great if it had been much, much longer. Because the idea is interesting. And I think if we had kind of gotten to know some of these characters and found out more about them and how they were affected by this big historical thing on a more personal level, that could be really interesting. But it just winds up being this sort of parade of familiar faces that get nothing to do. Marcia Gay Harden is an ER nurse. And you think, oh, wow, okay, so what's her story? We will never find out because it's just Marcia Gay Harden is an ER nurse and then we are on to the next thing. The only characters this movie spends the tiniest bit of time getting to know are Giamatti as Abraham Zapruder and James Badge Dale as Bob Oswald, Lee Harvey Oswald's brother. I didn't even know he had a brother. The movie does kind of focus on some interesting details.
Imagine what a bummer that would be to be Lee Harvey Oswald's brother.
That would super suck. You know, there's some interesting
finding out that Charles Manson's your father.
Oh, you know? Yeah. There's some interesting details in the movie, like, okay, so they've got to put the coffin on Air Force One, but they right. don't want to put it in the cargo hold, so they have to figure out how to make room for it in the main cabin, so they have to take out rows of seats and just trying to struggle to get it up the...
Why did they put it in the cargo hold?
Because it's...
What's it going to happen? What's going to happen?
Because it would be...
Is it going to re-die?
It would be disrespectful. So,
I don't get it.
So they're having to, like, struggle to get the thing up the little stairs to the plane, and then they can't make the turn because it's this giant coffin, and they have to bust out a, you know, partition. So, like, these kind of things. Yeah, it's very Benny Hill. No, I mean, you never think about this stuff, and it's like, okay, that, more of that would have been great. But it just as it is, it's just, it's like, it's the millionth movie we've seen about the Kennedy assassination with people like Billy Bob Thornton and Colin Hanks and Zac Efron and...
How's Zac Efron? Is he hunky?
You know, he's playing a sexy young intern, and I bought it, I suppose. You know, Mark Duplass...
I just, every time I think, every time I hear about Zac Efron...
Thanks for making that an invisible edit.
I'm sorry. I knew there was no good way to...
Not make if you don't try.
There's no trying and making. Right. There's no trying and succeeding that kind of seamless edit. Every time I think about Zac Efron in a movie, in my head, there is an Entertainment Tonight reporter or an E! News reporter talking about how hunky he is in the film. Exclusive hunky new photos of hunky Zac Efron from the set of blabbly blah, whatever like movie he's going right. to be in.
Well, hunky Zac Efron is fine, but again, he, like most of the rest of the cast, is barely in it, you know, and it doesn't really have time to register as a character. So,
right.
you know, this was produced by Tom Hanks's company, Playtone. If they had made the 10-hour HBO miniseries version of this, might have been interesting, but in 90 minutes, you're just left with the kind of Cliff Notes, basically.
Right, right. So,
yeah.
What else? What else you got?
Those are the ones I saw that you didn't. So.
Concussion. I haven't seen.
Oh, Concussion. You haven't seen Concussion. Yeah. That's right.
God, still haven't seen.
You
Concussion.
Need to watch Concussion.
No, I will. Right. Relax. I'm gonna.
It's one of my favorite movies at Sundance. Also premiered at Sundance this year. It's a writer director Stacey Passon's first film. It's executive produced by Rose Trochet, who did Go Fish and. Not the Myth of Fingerprints. What am I thinking of? The Safety of Objects.
Yes.
And several other films. Who is awesome? This is about a dissatisfied housewife. She is, you know, she's in the suburbs and she's married to a rich lawyer, and her days are filled with spinning class and picking up the kids at school and, you know, house updates and that kind of thing, and going to the grocery store. And one day she gets hit in the head with her son's baseball, and that just sort of opens the floodgate of like, I need
turns her into a super lesbian.
I need something different. Well, she's a lesbian. That I was getting there. Thanks for cutting that off. She's married to a woman, but the movie's very matter-of-fact about it, and so are all the other sort of rich suburbanites around them.
But she's just a run-of-the-mill lesbian before she gets bonked on the head.
She is a
I bonked my head.
She is a housewifey lesbian. And then she goes back to work as an interior designer, and she's refurbishing this loft space in Manhattan, which she then uses as her base of operations when she becomes a sex worker.
This is Belle du Jour.
Yes, pretty much. It's a little Belle du Jour, a little Jean Dielman, a little Stepford Wives, you know, but it's not one of those sort of movies that wears its references on its sleeve, but it's you know, a little Last Tango in Paris. It's a fascinating film. Robin Weigert plays the housewife. She was Calamity Jane on Deadwood. And it's just, you know, it's a really smart portrayal of a woman's sort of dissatisfaction and trying to figure out, you know, new things she can do. The movie doesn't exactly endorse or, you know, decry sex work, but it kind of explores it as an avenue for her to sort of, you know, get through this sort of midlife crisis. It's beautifully shot. It's funny. It's smart. It's very sexy. People ought to go see it. And if it's open, I think, in New York and L.A. this weekend. It's going to be expanding somewhat. But it is also available on demand. You can watch it on iTunes, on Vudu, whatever that is, and on Xbox Live.
What's Vudu?
V-U-D-U. It's a thing. It's a streaming source.
I see.
You can have voodoo on your Roku, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, I we'll talk about it more when you see it, because I want you to see it.
All right, we will, yes.
Anyway, but yeah, Concussion, go see it, folks. It's one of my totally favorite movies of the year. You should look for it.
Okay, so Runner Runner is this movie that is not Gravity.
Yeah.
And it stars Ben Affleck and Justin Timberlake. It's about gambling. And Justin Timberlake is the smart yet naive young buck who finds himself in the magical gambling kingdom of Ben Affleck and showered with money and bikini ladies and the cars and the gleaming
surfaces
of kitchens where no one is cooking anything. And,
it's another movie about a brash.
You find out.
Hungry young man who gets taken in by an older, wiser mentor, but who's actually
going there. If you're gonna let me tell the story,
playing
a runner, runner,
and he's a lesbian too, and they're playing.
Then he gets bonked on the head,
and they're playing.
And he becomes a sex worker.
They're playing a very dangerous game.
He gets lured into this glamorous world of money and gambling online gambling
on the internet.
And Affleck treats him like a protege, like a kid brother.
I like your moxie, kid.
But he's really setting him up to take the fall for all the crime.
So Will...
He's going to abscond off to extradition place with all that cash.
Can Timberlake turn the tables?
And yes, because if he couldn't, then there would be no movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... terrible and
you
boring.
Kind of
there's
wish
no
that
excitement about gambling.
Turn the tables because Affleck's more fun to watch.
Affleck does all the good things in this movie. Yeah. He wears the shiny suits.
Mm-hmm.
He smooth talks everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He throws raw chickens to his crocodile pets, and then he pushes people into the crocodile pond
covered in schmaltz,
covered in chicken fat. Mm-hmm. It's great. And so you're by the middle of the movie, you're thinking, I sure hope Ben Affleck gets out of this alive.
I want
happily.
Good things to happen to
like,
that
I
guy.
I want this guy to win. He's Scarface, and you don't want Scarface to die. At the end of Scarface, you cry when Scarface dies. It's not like at the end of Jaws.
Nobody cry when Jaws die.
Nobody cry when Jaws die. When Scarface die, everybody cry.
thank you, Dino De Laurentiis.
And so by the end of this Runner Runner, you're thinking, okay, this movie sucks poop from a butt. And yet, I'm hoping that Ben Affleck has a happy ending,
yes,
of crime.
I want him to fly off into the sunset with Gemma Arterton and her crazy tan.
And that dummy Justin Timberlake goes to prison for everything forever. And I'm not saying this because I don't like Justin Timberlake.
No.
I dig Justin Timberlake. I was rewatching a video of him performing on SNL just a few days ago because the song is so nice. And
bring it on back to Omeletteville?
That one. Mm. Yes. Now, here's why I was watching it. Because his band, that big band that he's got now,
right,
they're so excited. Have you seen other than that SNL episode, have you seen that band perform?
No.
I think they're all on cocaine. Like, they are all, like, jumping up and
allegedly
down and dancing and singing along. They are a wildly enthusiastic band.
Probably because they've been playing, you know, old folks' homes and weddings for the last decade.
But they're terrific. Like, I'm watching the video just to watch the band be crazy. But anyway, and I don't think he's bad in movies.
No,
Justin Timberlake is fine in movies.
I liked him in Social Network, even in that stupid In Time movie
this
thought he was fine.
Is just a terrible movie.
Yeah, but he's not good in it. I mean, he's
out of his
out of his comfort zone. They make him talk math, which is hilarious. We ran it through the modal plasma computer at Princeton and meow, 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 meow. And his eyes are sort of shifting around like, I'm not buying this and I don't really know what I'm doing.
When he gets mad, he just looks sort of like peeved.
Yeah, and he talks through his nose.
Yeah,
it's not a good performance.
It's not a thing that you want to watch.
No.
Ever. Other than when on YouTube eventually you're going to watch the scene where Affleck throws chickens at crocodiles.
Yes.
When that's pretty great.
Yeah. They should have saved that for a better movie.
That should be just a loop. The him throwing chickens at crocodiles. So then finally we come to Lee Daniels' Gravity.
Yes.
Which stars Oprah Winfrey and Forrest Whitaker as astronauts in space. And Oprah gets lost in space with a low oxygen supply. And she has to fight and battle her way back to Earth.
Against killer robots.
Against the space debris. Mm. And every time the space debris tries to kill her, she's like, "Do you know who I am? I'm Oprah. You better quit space debris-ing at me, or I'm going to cause a public display, much like I did with Hermes and also the lady that wouldn't sell me the $40,000 handbag."
And it turns out that apogee and perigee are among her favorite things.
Yeah. So then Oprah, well, I won't tell you. I can't give you spoilers.
No.
Because you want to you go see this movie so you find out if Oprah survives space or not.
Right.
Also, maybe if Forrest Whitaker survives space.
Yes.
The two of them together. The end of my review of Gravity.
Stop it. So, okay. It's Alfonso Cuarón.
All right, I'm so in love with this movie.
I know.
I talk about this movie and I get tingly and excited again. Other than Spring Breakers, I have not seen a big, wide-release Hollywood movie this year that has made me feel so afraid and exhausted, and I was moved. Like, I cried at this one little part near the end. I'm not going to tell you what it is. And it's beautiful to look at. I'm trying to talk about it without discussing it.
I know.
It's so beautiful to look at. I don't know how they made it.
It's so
technically astonishing to look at. The 3D is better than anything I've ever seen in my entire life.
It's the kind
Sandra Bullock is like, I know they gave her an Oscar once already. They could probably just give her another one if she wanted it now. I'm in love with this movie. That's all I'm going to say. You talk.
Oh. Do I get to talk now?
It's your turn now.
Are you finally finished?
Now it's your turn.
We get so jaded about CGI and digital effects and the idea that you can pretty much make anything happen in a movie that you take it for granted and you just assume, well, yes, of course, you know, aliens are invading New York, or, you know, hobbits and orcs are doing whatever hobbits and orcs do.
They battle, dummy.
But in this movie,
maybe if you had seen those movies, in this movie, they battle.
I would occasionally catch myself thinking,
they battle valiantly.
Okay,
for
can
the
we
ring
shut up about
the honor
Hobbit.
Of
I
the hobbits?
I don't care about the Tolkien movies. I'm talking about Gravity.
Another one of your problems, along with loving ABC.
I'm talking
too
much about Gravity, which you should be tingling about and shutting up. Anyway. There were times where I would kind of pause and think, I honestly have no idea how they shot this. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it's all green screen and wire and who knows what, but it seems like it was shot on location in space.
In space. They went to the moon.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. And believe me, if you can see this in 3D IMAX, it is totally worth it.
Yes.
I went and saw it at the newly refurbished Chinese, the Grauman's Chinese. They gutted the whole inside, turned it into an IMAX theater, and it was extraordinary. I mean, the thing about IMAX 3D is you have to kind of keep moving your head. Like, the things that are sort of in your peripheral vision maybe get a little out of focus. But it is so crisp and so gorgeous. And the silences in this movie are so
silent.
Silent. I mean, you could just feel everybody in the theater, like,
right,
just not even moving. You know, right. we nobody was eating popcorn. Nobody. There was just, you know, you got into it all.
Right.
I mean, at one level, if you wanted to be reductive about this, it's kind of the perils of Pauline in space, in that Sandra Bullock's character sort of goes from one frying pan to another fire to another fire to another fire to another fire.
But each event is more and more impossible.
Exactly, yeah. Just the odds of her surviving this insanity just gets deeper and deeper, and it's pretty much her and Clooney. Like, they're it. Apart from the voice of Ed Harris.
Right, it's just two people in
from
the
Mission Control. It's really just them. They're it, right. And they're enough. They're so compelling, and I'm trying not to talk about it too much because I was certainly avoiding hearing about it before I saw it.
I can't even talk about what I believe the film is. I think there are lots of things the movie's about. But I cannot discuss what those things are right now without tipping plot hand.
I would say that the movie is about extreme situations, sort of putting a fine point on the idea of being alive and staying alive.
And will you choose
to
fight through and keep your life?
Exactly.
Because of
other things.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's stunning. It's stunning. It's gorgeous. Emmanuel Lubezki shot it. Technically, it is a marvel. It's just captivating.
I was shaking when it was over. I can't wait to see it again. Obviously, you know, it's not for everyone.
Yeah, if you have claustrophobia issues.
If you have extreme phobias about the sort of things that you think are going to be in this movie, then maybe you shouldn't go. Because it really pushes you. It really pushes you. I did not see it in IMAX 3D, but I did see it in a really amazing situation. I saw it at the Dolby Lab in Burbank. Which is where they mix stuff there.
Yeah.
This is where they make the sounds happen. and the screen wasn't all that big. I mean, it was a normal sized movie theater screen, screening room kind of screen, or like 40 seats.
It was bigger than my field of vision.
But the Atmos, the Dolby Atmos, just goes right through you.
Yeah.
It's so powerful and so just. I remained silent through the film, but inside I was doing this. Oh my god! 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 No! 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 Stop! Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh my god! Like that was the whole thing.
Yeah.
For me. I've said everything I can say without giving things away, I'm not going to do it. Maybe later when it comes on the DVD, we can talk more about it.
It will be interesting to talk to you about Captain Phillips and All Is Lost in the context of Gravity.
This is the trend of...
This is the fall of Oscar winners lost at sea.
Battling for their lives in impossible...
In enclosed spaces.
Circumstances,
Go see Gravity and go see it as big as you can.
There are people who don't like this movie already, who have lots of things, negative things to say about it. I don't know exactly what those reasons are just yet. I've been seeing things on Facebook, people commenting on, reviews saying, I saw it, it sucked. And I'm like, okay, well, can you tell me more than it sucked? Can you tell me why you think it sucked? Like, what was your problem?
Well, people say, I wasn't engaged. I didn't find it, engaging. And I just, I can't.
This movie is doing cartwheels to engage
you. I can't begin to figure that out because from the opening moments, I was just, totally got me in.
Yeah. So anyway, all right. Those are the current releases.
Yes.
What is your DVD recommendation?
My DVD recommendation is there's a 30th anniversary Blu-ray that is coming out this week of Monty Python's The Meaning of Life.
Right on.
Which is a movie I love. It is, apparently, I saw in some documentary where John Cleese basically said, after Life of Brian, somebody kind of came up and said, make this movie and you'll get paid more than you've ever made for anything in your entire life combined.
Right.
And they were all like, sure. But I think there's a lot of really, very memorable sketches. The Crimson Permanent Assurance and the Every Sperm is Sacred Number and It's Christmas in Heaven and Mr. Creosote it's wonderfully dark. It's all the stuff you love about Python. It's bizarre and funny and outrageous and scatological and satirical and if you've never seen it, it's great. So
mine is also a Blu-ray.
Uh-huh.
Old Boy comes out on Blu-ray this week.
Ah, okay.
And the remake is coming soon.
Yeah, next month,
I think. But if I'm gonna, recommend something to somebody, I will say see the original Old Boy before you see the remake, because I don't know what's going to happen in the remake. I don't know, how it's going to turn out. But I would hate for people to see the remake and it not be good. Mm-hmm. And then decide they don't want to see the original. Hmm. Because the original is flabbergasting and darker and weirder and more terrible and more amazing and more thrilling than you can imagine.
I need to see it.
It is about a man who is imprisoned in a room for 15 years and then suddenly he's let out. And he has no understanding of why he was there or why he was let out, and he goes and finds out.
Hmm. Yeah, I need to see it. I never saw the original Old Boys. So.
It's amazing.
I will watch it
before
I see the Spike Lee version that is coming out. I have heard one or two things about it from other critics, but it's all embargoed, so I won't talk about it.
He eats a live animal in this film. And the actor really did eat the live animal on screen. Two takes.
Ew.
Yeah, they gave him two. He had to do two of them.
Divine only needed one take to eat the poodle poop. I'm just saying.
Well, here's the thing about the poodle poop. It wasn't fighting back.
Well, there is that.
See, and that's...
fair enough.
A thing that happens when you try to devour a live animal.
Something tells me PETA is not going to let Spike Lee do that.
It was a sea animal.
Yes.
So
people know about this scene, I think, by now. Yeah, sort of. Maybe they do. I mean, I know about it. I haven't seen the movie.
You think you don't want to watch it. You think you don't want to watch that scene? And then you're watching it, you're like, how did he do it? Look, he's doing that. How is he doing it? He's doing it by doing it.
Yes.
It's gross.
Like when Nicolas Cage eats the live cockroach Vampire's Kiss.
Right.
Only bigger.
I would eat a live cockroach if someone paid me Nicolas Cage dollars. Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Look, here's money. You could go buy a castle with it. Just all you have to do is eat this cockroach.
I don't think he was making castle money for Vampire's Kiss. That was kind of an indie.
You know what? It's still more money than I would have made doing anything.
That's probably true.
So
it's more than I got for reviewing Vampire's Kiss, I'm sure.
Here are letters.
Oh, great.
We have two long letters.
Okay.
Again, if you have not heard your letter yet, it's because they're in a little bit of a queue. Y'all have been writing us some long letters. So now we're going to...
blame your verbiose fellow listeners.
So it's come. Your letter's coming. It just hasn't, you know. Dear Alonzo the Touch Duralde and Dave the Power White.
You've got the touch. Go on.
Remember me? I'm the dude who really liked The Ghost and the Darkness.
The one.
A few weeks ago, you mentioned in passing my favorite movie song of all time, The Touch by Stan Bush. And I couldn't resist coming back with five more movies I'm ashamed to be in love with. Number one, The FP.
Oh, yeah. I remember that premiered at South by Southwest, and there was a really... there was some sort of very awkward Q&A where I think one of the people involved with the film was drunk and disparaging it from the audience or something like that. That's the last thing I remember about that movie.
He says, this is the movie you would get if you asked Joe Biden and the people who make Chick Tracks to make a film about the real problems kids are facing today and the dangers of video games and hip-hop music. Pat Robertson would watch this movie and preach to the 700 Club that this is what our children look like when our backs are turned. These are the nightmares of Tipper Gore. Crossroads. No, not the Britney Spears vehicle from 2002.
I was just about to ask.
I'm talking about the Walter Hill movie from 1986.
Oh, no!
Ralph Macchio
learns the blues.
Is a classical guitar player by day with aspirations of being a blues man by night.
He befriends
blind dog Willie Fulton, a harmonica player and last known living associate of famous blues guitar player Robert Fulton. The two embark on a journey of musical apprenticeship and zany rabble-rousing that eventually leads to Macchio's character engaging in a guitar duel against the devil's ace, Steve Vai! Oh, yeah. For the salvation of both Willie's and Ralph's souls.
Oh, yeah.
That's not a metaphor. They meet Satan and guitar fight him.
It's true.
It's effing metal.
It's very Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Devil got my woman. 3, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Come on.
This movie is worth every penny. Just to see Gary Oldman give the performance of a lifetime. And as an aside, Can we all agree that Keanu Reeves can drop the Reeves part and join the level of Cher, Madonna, and Prince as a person who only really needs one name? Chained Heat 2. Women's prison movies have always been schlocky, misogynistic messes, but none of them captured bad boob jobs of the 90s the way that Chained Heat 2 did. For Christ's sake, this has Bridget Nielsen. Solomon Kane.
That went straight to DVD, I think.
Yeah, well.
In this country.
I just caught this one on Netflix about 2 weeks ago.
Aha. Uh-huh.
You see, I was sorely disappointed by Season of the Witch.
Who wasn't? We've all been there.
I felt like it never went crazy enough to make the most of its cast, and instead we just got a lazy heap of garbage that producers were too timid to let off the rails. Not so with Solomon Kane. It's about a Puritan adventurer fighting the denizens of hell in pre-colonial Europe, and it lives up to everything that description would have you dream about. Sadly, you can really see the budget fall apart at the end because the special effects revert to a level just barely above something you'd see from The Asylum.
Oof.
But honestly, if you're in the mood for some straight-up bonkers genre action, then please give this movie a chance. honorable mention, Spartacus, the TV show.
Oh.
Yes, I know this is a TV show, but hear me out. 15-year-old boys these days have no idea how good they have it. If a show this violent and sexually explicit, with not even a basic attempt at story, had existed when I was a teenager, I would have masturbated to death.
Somebody made the comment, like, that today's youngsters will never know the lengths to which their forebears went to see a boob.
A boob, yeah. I think it was Louis C.K. that said that, didn't he?
Oh, maybe. Or Patton Oswalt, one of those guys.
All I had was reruns of VIP, Valerie Irons Protection, and Shaka Zulu on PBS. Spartacus is everything 15-year-old me with no girlfriend, no cable, and dial-up internet could have ever wanted. Lastly, here is...
And young gay boys, I think, would have appreciated that show, too. Just based on the one episode I saw. I was like, whoa. Yeah. No, not just shirtlessness. But there was like...
Dude, butts and things.
Butts and like, there were man-on-man centurions in that show.
No, I know. Lastly, here is my contest entry for the Wolf Mask giveaway, which I have actually already read on the show once before, but I will read it again in the interest of completing this letter.
Is this our winner? Or?
No.
Oh, this is somebody else.
Okay. I bought O Hussard Baltasar at Dave White's behest, and now I can't look at a donkey without crying. It's so true. That's it. Thanks as always for all the fun times and smart podcasting.
Ooh.
That's from JM. So thank you, JM. That's a lovely letter.
Yes, even though you have insane tastes.
Dear David Alonso, I wrote to you once before with picks from my top 100, but this letter will be a bit different and shorter. You both always choose interesting music for the intro, not both of us.
Oh, shut up.
And after seeing Alonso tweet about Donald Fagen, I was wondering if you guys could talk about some of your favorite albums or possibly list them somewhere.
You could have read me this before we went on the air.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm a big fan of this 90s band called Jellyfish that I have played once on the show before.
Mm-hmm. They were a good band.
They were very cool and very kind of an amalgam of references, but they sort of took it and did something with it. So even if you can pick out Badfinger and Queen and whatever else that they're sort of aping, they put their own stamp on the material. So they put out only two albums, really. So Jellyfish... Belly Button and Spilt Milk, I highly recommend both of them. Donald Fagen's The Nightfly is one that I love. Talking Heads' Stop Making Sense soundtrack. Something from this decade would be nice, but I don't
know.
I am
completely blank on what I would say to answer that question.
I've been listening a lot to the Esquivel station on Pandora lately, so which means I get a lot of... Antonio Carlos Jobim and Astrid Gilberto and various Muzaki covers of Wave. So I like that a lot.
Here's what's in my car right now.
Oh, and Paris, Rosemary Clooney and the Paris Prado Orchestra's A Touch of Tabasco.
Mm, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I have a CD player in my car. So there are actually CDs in my car. And I keep them separated. I keep the ones that you would want to listen to along with me in the glove box.
I see.
So that's, you know, Kylie, Alpha Beat, you know.
All of your teen girl music.
Things that are for teenage girls. Yeah. That's what's in the glove box. That's for you. Mm-hmm. When you're riding in the car with me, whatever's in the glove box is what goes in the CD player. In the middle is all the noise and metal.
The Xanthor?
Yes, Xanthor. Your favorite and mine.
X-A-N-T-H-U-R.
You're thinking of Zastor.
Oh.
That's who I was listening to last week on Sunday afternoon when I was cooking dinner by myself in the kitchen, minding my own business, when Gary Cotti, our friend, marches into the house unannounced, like Kramer, basically, and walks into the kitchen, doesn't even say hello to me, takes the tape out of the tape player.
Bless him.
Switches it out for the Pretty in Pink soundtrack that we have on cassette in the kitchen. And says, when your friends come to your home, they don't want to feel like they're dying.
And he's right. I'd say, I think Emily Post would agree, that when guests come over, they don't want to feel like they're dying.
Guess what, guests? If I go to the door and greet you and invite you into my home, I will have already turned off the noisy, horrible music that is so beautiful to my ears. But if I'm cooking you dinner in the kitchen, and I'm alone in the kitchen, and there's no one there, I get to listen to Zastor at any volume I want to while I'm making you a dinner, which is what I was doing. He was coming over for dinner. I post this on Facebook, and it gets like 100 likes. Everyone agrees with Gary Cotti.
Yes. No one wants to hear Xanthor when it's dinner time.
I don't answer to any of you. How's about them? How you like them apples? Yeah. Here's what's in the car right now.
It is not fun to enjoy, that music.
It is fun to enjoy. No. It's fun for me to enjoy.
It's only you.
I have the 1955 Berlin recording of Maria Callas performing Lucia di Lammermoor.
Mm, yes, you do.
That's in the car. Well, actually, I took it out of the car. It's sitting right here on the table, but it's going back into the car.
I just popped in
Celtic Frost's Morbid Tales. I actually took that out of the CD player and put it in the Lucia di Lammermoor box while I put the Maria Callas CD in the player, revolving them back and
forth. Heaven
forbid
the Celtic Frost slide around the floor and get scratched.
That should not happen.
I also have a CD player. I just popped in the original cast album for Merrily We Roll Along.
I took your car to the car wash yesterday morning.
Because the Fathom Events version of that is coming up.
It's a good thing we don't live in Russia. And here's why.
Because we would be killed to death?
I would have been killed to death at the car wash yesterday. Uh-huh. Because I bring your car to the car wash at 7 a.m. yesterday morning.
Uh-huh.
And I'm cleaning out the inside as well as the outside. And on the inside door is where all your CDs are.
Right.
Here's what I found. The soundtrack to Yentl. The soundtrack to Goodbye, Mr. Chips. With Petula Clark. The soundtrack to the movie Clue. Those three. And then some singer-songwriter stuff.
I had a Bill Lloyd CD.
Lloyd and that Owsley guy. Yeah. And then our friend Blue.
Right.
So it's like these two different things. Like the singer-songwriter bros.
Mm-hmm.
And then the gayest.
I think I had the Follies cast album.
Oh, yes.
There too.
The Follies cast album was in there too. So if we were in Russia and someone had seen me cleaning out that car, they would have been like, a car of the homosexuals. Now they die.
Your Celtic Frost is super gay.
Yeah, I know. I know it is. Here's the other letter.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, this is the same letter. We just got off on a digression.
Oh, sorry. Oh, yeah, he's asking about albums.
He's asking about music, which is not what this podcast is about.
No.
This is a podcast of the cinema.
Yes. Go on.
He says, here's a movie list I'm going to put in here anyway. Years ago, I created a best and worst movies of the alphabet. Here are 26 worst movies in alphabetical order.
That's actually how I met Dave Kittredge.
Is it really?
He was doing something similar on LiveJournal.
Ape. A-P-E.
A-P-E, oh, brother. These are worst, right?
Battlefield Earth.
Okay, yes.
Car 54, where are you?
Ooh.
Disaster movie.
Ugh.
Envy.
Oh, yeah.
From Justin to Kelly.
Oh. Skirt of Ties.
Indeed. Skirt of Ties. Glitter. House of the Dead.
I just want to point out that I once hosted a double feature of Glitter and From Justin to Kelly.
Yes, you did.
At the historic Egyptian Theater under the auspices of the American Cinematheque.
Yes, you did.
So there.
House of the Dead.
Oh, with Dr. Tara Reid.
No, Tara Reid is in Alone in the Dark.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Don't you know anything?
I'm so embarrassed.
It's Pat the movie?
Ween was in it.
Jaws the Revenge.
Oh, yeah.
Kazam.
Oh.
Leonard Part 6. Meet the Deedles. I haven't seen that. I don't know what that is. What is that?
I don't know. I saw Meet the Feebles and Meet the Applegates, but I don't know what Meet the Deedles is.
Troma's A Nymphoid Barbarian in Dinosaur Hell.
Mm-hmm.
Oasis of the Zombies. Plan 9 from Outer Space. Queen of the Damned. Rhinestone.
Oof.
Super Babies. Yeah. Baby Geniuses 2.
Your favorite.
That one is that. I fell on my sword that day. It was Super Babies. Teenage Caveman. Oh, you're not going to like this.
What?
U is for...
Until the End of the World?
No. Take a guess. It's a letter movie that begins with the letter U that you love. And it's a Christmas movie. And our friend Maya wrote it.
Unaccompanied Minors! Boo! Boo, I say!
Voodoo Academy.
Uh-huh.
Who's Your Caddy? Oh, come on now. Who's Your Caddy is a delight. Triple X, State of the Union. You're the Hunter from the Future. And Zodiac Killer. And the number sign, hashtag pound sign entry is for Three Ninjas High Noon at Mega Mountain. Thanks for reading the letter, guys. Keep up the good work. Chad. Thank you, Chad.
Thanks, Chad, but you're totally wrong about Unaccompanied Minors. Meet the Deedles. The plot description...
Wait till we tell Maya. She's going to hate him.
She doesn't like that movie either. The plot description is two surfers end up as Yellowstone Park Rangers and have to stop a former ranger who is out for revenge. It stars Paul Walker, A.J. Langer, Dennis Hopper, I suspect, is probably the...
Meet the Deedles?
Yes. Robert England, Anna Gasteyer.
I don't know this movie.
Hattie Winston.
When did it come out? What year is it?
1998.
I don't know this one.
It's written by the guy who wrote Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers, and Tapeheads.
He likes meat movies.
Apparently, yeah. And it was directed by some guy named Steve Boyum, who's directed lots of television.
It's a Shonda for the boy.
Pretty much. He also directed Supercross and The Lady Musketeer and Time Cop 2, The Berlin Decision, went straight to DVD. And Slapshot 2, Breaking the Ice, which went straight to DVD. And Mom's Got a Date with a Vampire. And
okay, great.
Johnny Tsunami. And
this sounds wonderful.
Stepsister from Planet Weird. These are real movies.
All right, we're done.
Okay. As
I'm
always.
I'm fixing to make dinner.
Woo. Are you going to listen to more Xanthor?
I'm going to listen to some Xanthor.
Okay, great.
No, you know what? I am. I'm going to put Xastor back in the tape player just to see what he does when he walks in. Because he's going to skate in here all high on life and yank it out of the tape player.
Good. Well, then maybe that can be a new tradition for you.
I can't be tamed.
On Sundays. Thank you for listening as always, and we would point you to our friends out there, ChristyLemire.com. Check out Matt Atchity and Chris and Gray Drake on Rotten Tomatoes Radio. There is finally, after 6 months, a new episode.
They finally got themselves
of The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli. So I can now plug that again because it exists. There's a new episode of The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli. You should listen to it. Also, check out Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, Game Night Guys, Secretly Timid, The Lunch. You can subscribe to this show on iTunes and leave us a review. The more positive reviews we get, the better our placement on the homepage is, and that helps us.
Apparently, the person who wrote the negative review on iTunes changed their review.
Really?
Somebody told me that they saw that they saw that happen. Like the negative review went down and a good review went up. Same person.
Funny. I'll have to look at that. I guess they were bewitched by our awesomeness.
They were, maybe they felt ashamed of themselves.
Could be.
For their behavior.
Yes. I hope they learned something. You can stream this program at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. Like our Facebook page, Linoleum Knife Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at GetGlue.com. Visit linoleum-knife.com on a regular basis. We will be adding lots of new stuff and links to our work elsewhere. And, of course, you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with any questions, comments, top 10 lists, bottom 10 lists, or inquiries about how to get autographed copies of Have Yourself a Movie Little Christmas.
Because you want one of those.
We are in the final stretch of the year. It is time to start thinking about stocking stuffers.
It's time for you to start buying stuff.
And it's so awesome, I have to say, for myself, because there really aren't a lot of books out there about Christmas movies, and there's only one of them.
Yours is the best.
There's only one of them written by me, so there you go.
Also, yours is the best.
Well, thank you. That's
it's the best.
I could not. It would be gross if I said that, but I'm glad you did. Anyway,
if I wrote it, I would say mine is the best.
Mine is the best. Fine. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next week.
Goodbye.